Chicago bound.
This is a swing and a miss by Trey Turner, who Sandy has finally retired for the first time tonight. And now Sandy Alcantara is in solo second place in franchise history.
Just like that, move past JJ and closer to Ricky.
How much you really want to give up for this guy? But he's kind of starting to get back to his old self again. I think he's got like a 2.274 ERA in June in his four starts. So he's got a cheap contract too. So you're going to have everybody in the world after this guy. He's the number one fish out there. People really want this guy.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Beautiful Saturday morning in the city of Chicago. David Hall, Bruce Levine with you until 11 o'clock talking baseball. And that was a highlight from Sandy Alcantara's last start. And Bob Nightingale on this radio station earlier this week, I think he was talking with Rami Makhlouf during one of the night shows. And Bob was setting the stage and describing what it would take to get Sandy Alcantara out of Florida. He pitches today against the Diamondbacks. He has been better in the month of June, Bruce. We talk about Sandy Alcantara as the main prize of the trade season, which the deadline is still a month away. But as we sit here a month away, how would you assess the Cubs' chances of getting Sandy Alcantara and also the kind of pitcher they would be getting?
Well, at his best, and he's not quite there yet because he was – I think the Cy Young Award winner 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
At his best, he's in the top four or five pitchers in baseball. Is he getting back there? Well, his last three starts are like this. Last time out, he pitched six innings, gave up six hits, three runs. Time before, five innings, five hits, two runs. Prior to that, six innings, three hits, no runs. So, is he starting to come back to form? He was a little wonky coming back, had Tommy John surgery 2 years ago. So it's a it's a projection, and it's, you know, is it? I guess the question is, if you're the other teams right now, like the Cubs, do you want to see him like tonight dominate and be back at his form before you trade?
Yes, I think I would want to see him at his best. I know that might cost you more and it might entice different teams, but I think that you don't want to see him struggle because if you view him as the solution to your problem, you'd like to see him continue to ascend because even though he's wearing another uniform, you'd like to see his stuff be sharp and you'd like to be able to project that. It's easier to convince not only yourself, but maybe people in your front office, people in your clubhouse, people in your fan base that it would be worth sacrificing what you're going to have to sacrifice to get Sandy Alcantara. So the more he looks like an ace, the better off your argument is, the stronger your argument is.
Not any start over six innings this year.
Well, we talked earlier in the show, Bruce. That's baseball. That's baseball today. We made a lot out of Wednesday's marquee matchup between Paul Skenes and Jacob Mizorowski. Neither one got to the sixth inning. Both young aces threw no more than 80 pitches apiece. But Mizorowski gave him five, and he left. And then he was a talk of baseball. That's today. If Sandy Alcantara came to the Chicago Cubs and from August to September started eight games and gave you 48 innings and they won six of those games, seven of those games, you made the deal of the season. That you put yourself
right
in the situation that Jed Hoyer wants to put the Cubs in. Bruce, the days of Rick Sutcliffe coming midseason and going 16-1 are over.
What's it going to take to get him?
That's a better question. That's a really hard question to answer. How many prospects, who will they be, and what are you willing to part with? I would say, with the contract that is as affordable as Sandy Alcantara's is, he's signed through 2026. There's a team option to 2027. So as we described, 2 years of team control after this one.
How much is he making?
I think he's $17 million.
$17 or $18.
You're going to have to pay more than you will for a rental, more than you would for somebody who's going to be a free agent next November.
Alcantara, 17 this year, $21 million player option the following year.
Okay, so that's an average of $19 million for the next two seasons for somebody who you would view
You said player option or team option?
I think it's team option.
Option. It's a team option. $19 million a year for a guy over the next two seasons that could put you in a position where you have legitimate World Series aspirations.
Two in a row, right?
Yeah. Two in a row.
So, again, for the Cubs to be in that position of, hey, we can go for it, I mean, that's what you build your farm system for, right? It's not for, oh, we got to hold on to these guys because we want to be good for the next 5 or 6 years. I think you want to be the Atlanta Braves, or you want to be the, you know, the team that goes to the playoffs 14 years in a row. I don't think in modern baseball you can project past a couple years, you know, with the young player, older player combo. Keep in mind, you know, you have Suzuki, you have you have your left fielder, you have your right fielder, you have numerous pitchers that are only signed through next year, right? So with that in mind...
Your window's open now.
Right.
The urgency exists now. Everything is about now. You have your team president now. Right. You probably will have him for a while. My sense is that Jed Hoyer is not going anywhere. That I think, is safe to assume.
Here's the...
What's the latest?
Here's the problem with my projection, and that is, we talk about winning the World Series. We don't talk about the trap of getting in the playoffs and losing in the first round.
Well, see, you call it a trap. I call it progress, because if you go and look at it that way, we have to keep the pressure on. We have to keep thinking in these terms. We have to keep looking at the Cubs as a potential World Series team. But, Bruce...
Every year.
And we're in the midst of this year. We're smack dab in the middle of this year. But this year, let's face it, if they make a move for Alcantara and they are able to get to the playoffs and win the division by 5 games or going away or whatever, and they get into the NLDS and somehow they lose a series, but they play at a high level, I think you'll look at this season as progress. And that's what you want.
Right. So does the contract for Hoyer convolute things when you're talking about trading a lot of your young minor league players?
It doesn't have to, because I think even if Jed Hoyer had the mentality, he doesn't strike me as somebody after 14 years in this market as going to have the mentality as, well, I'm going out in a blaze of glory. And if this is my last year, then I'm going to... Who needs Owen Casey? Who needs Cade Horton? Hey, you want Kevin Alcantara too? You already got a jersey with the guy with the right name on the back. I don't think that right. Jed Hoyer's that kind of a guy that's going to make a haphazard decision with no... I look at it almost like as an investor. You have a fiduciary responsibility to your client. And I think that Jed Hoyer will take all of his responsibilities seriously, regardless of his contract.
Well, we don't even know if he signed a new contract or not, and we won't, right? There's that possibility.
There's a possibility he's already locked up.
Possibility, right?
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I think you're right. We give Hoyer the benefit of the doubt that, hey, he's already traded young players away to get to where they're at, right? You traded arguably a great young player of the not-too-distant future in Smith to get – Tucker, right?
Right.
So with that in mind, having Alcantara for 2 more years, is that good enough to give up a talent like Horton? Most people say, give him Brown. Don't worry about it. Well,
there's a big difference, I think, in prospect evaluation between Ben Brown and Cade Horton.
I think you're right.
And I think that if you're a team like the Miami Marlins, you're going to be looking at these things, and you're going to be weighing. You're not going to be weighing Cade Horton against Ben Brown. You're going to be weighing Cade Horton against the best prospect I'm offered from another contender.
Right.
And that is why I think the Cade Horton question, as much as I may want to deny.
Everybody hates it.
I know they hate it, and I also am one who my initial reaction is to hate it, but as you wait and you look at it, you have to consider it, because this is the kind of season that we have described. That is the context for 2025, and if you're willing to try to go for it, it might mean trading somebody that you felt like initially begin the season was going to be a big part of the future.
See, the difference in, you know, they have a Edward Cabrera, who's a very good pitcher, that's going to be available as well, most likely. Pittsburgh has Keller, who's going to be available. These are good pitchers. They can go right into your rotation and do a good job. Mm-hmm. The difference is, can you project them being on the hill in game one or game seven of the World Series and being the difference maker, as opposed to Alcantara at his best, right?
Yes. I think you're more likely to get what you're looking for when you trade for a guy who is – his ceiling's much higher. That's what you're getting at.
Right.
And Mitch Keller, Luis Severino, they would be fine additions, but they wouldn't generate the kind of enthusiasm from your fan base, maybe your clubhouse – that getting a guy like Alcantara would.
I'll read this one more time. Cubs starting pitchers the last 10 games, 4-5-6, 4-5, 5 1/3, 4 2/3, 5-4-5. They've won 4 out of those 10 games.
What about have you heard any rumblings? And I asked this kind of – we have a text about it. During the week we get calls and texts about it. Jacob DeGrom. Is he on the market?
He might be.
Are the Rangers in seller mode? I mean,
the money is kind of crazy. But
money is crazy.
But he's back to looking like Jacob DeGrom again.
And I just wonder from the perspective of, if you don't get Sandy Alcantara, if you, you know, for whatever reason.
Isn't it a couple of years at about $70 million still left?
Or? You were right, Bruce. Yeah, 2 years, $37 million club option, but 2 years, $75 million before that.
Yikes. Yikes.
It's a lot of money.
So which is more valuable, money or Horton? Which are we more willing to part with if you're Tom Ricketts? Jacob DeGrom would be an immense, enormous investment.
And risk.
And risk.
Yeah.
Because you could trade for him, and a week later, oh, Cubs place Jacob DeGrom on the 10-day injured list or the 60-day injured list, or see you next year. Here's the $30 million check. That's tough.
These are the exciting things about baseball that you don't really have in the other sports, okay? We can talk about details. We can get information about how teams are talking about certain players being moved where. In the other sports, you just wait for those trades to happen.
I just think you're – well, that's true. I think the baseball conversation seems to last longer. We started in May.
We have better information to report.
Why do you think that is?
Because we're there every day for 160 days.
It's a daily grind. Yeah.
But it's twice as many games.
Yeah.
We fight like hell to keep our, as reporters and media people, to keep our access, which has been a huge problem dealing with Major League Baseball and the players.
And the context changes, if not game to game, week to week. Everything about the conversation is different, and it will be different maybe next week.
Right. But the hundreds of scouts that I've known, or the hundreds of scouts that Ken Rosenthal knows, or some of the other great reporters in the game, Bob Nightingale, that's built over years, you know, of trust and trade-offs and things like that. And that's why baseball is the best reported sport by far, as far as information goes.
That's an interesting claim, Bruce. I'm going to have to think about that one.
By far.
By far? I don't know about by far.
On a daily basis. You can't cover the NFL. The NFL is really uncoverable.
I think it's interesting. Why do you say uncoverable?
Because they don't allow you access.
But yeah, it's the one sport that we talk about 365 days a year in Chicago.
Yeah, because it's a sport that's played one game at a time.
I will say this. Just given my experience, and this would probably alienate some of my NFL friends, and I do have NFL friends.
It's not their fault.
I think the NFL media game is more of what I just that a game. It's more transactional, I think, in terms of the way it's covered.
Right, but they don't. They never let you talk to any coaches.
That's true.
I mean, it's like building sources for NFL reporters is so difficult. I covered for 15 years.
That's why it's more transactional.
I covered it for 15 years back, going back 15 years ago.
You covered George Halas?
Good. And I could develop really great sources with the assistant coaches. And that's where a lot of the information came from, right?
That's true. And to your point,
can't do it anymore.
In the context of this conversation, when you see guys like Ken Rosenthal, who's established, Bob Nightingale, who's established, you, who's established, on the same and the same beat, given the same set of circumstances and information, project the Cubs being active at the deadline, having some of the same names coming up. It does pique your curiosity, and it gives you a little bit more credence as to have these conversations about who they're going to get and why.
You can't have this segment in your NFL shows.
We can. It's just a little bit more speculative.
There's not enough information.
Well, there's plenty of information. There's just not enough confirmation
about who's going to be available, what it's going to take. Okay, sorry, I love those sports, not quite as much as baseball, but this is the best reported sport because we have access and we work hard at it. The NFL beat guys, the NBA, they work just as hard. They're just hitting their head against the wall a little bit more, right?
Yeah, a few more bruises for a Dan Weider over the course of a few months.
We're not better reporters in baseball. We just have better access.
There's no doubt about that. I think NFL reporters would probably agree with the access prior to that conversation. Let's get out to the phone lines because we have access to our callers as well. 312-644-6767. Frank is down in North Carolina. Thank you, Frank, for listening down in Ben Johnson country. Can we mention the Bears head coach on a baseball show? Yes, I just did. No. How's it going?
That's all right. I'm a Packer and a Brewer fan, but I have great interest in the Cubs. And I really enjoy watching the boys in the morning on television because I get that down here in North Carolina.
Thank you.
My question or thoughts are, the Cubs, it looks to me like you better be all in this year, because what are you going to do with the contracts of Pico Armstrong and Kyle Tucker? And right now, those are the guys, along with Suzuki and Happ, that are really driving force for you guys. Realize how good Kyle Tucker was. But he is such a steady force for your team. And you guys are a much better team than the Brewers. I don't know how the Brewers are doing it. It's got to be smoke and mirrors.
You're right, Frank. Thanks for the phone call and for listening and watching every day. Bruce, how does the Pete Crow Armstrong contract factor into any of the conversations about what to do about this season?
None. I don't think. I mean, you got 5 years,
right?
Of contract control left. That's a lifetime, right?
You're tabling that one if you're Jed Hoyer. Well,
I mean, look, it's important to sign him to a good contract, but where's he going, right? I mean, again, will he be unsignable if he continues to be an escalating course that gets him to be a superstar, top three player in baseball? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You still have 5 years, right?
You still have plenty of time.
What's wrong with 5 years?
Nothing's wrong with 5 years. And we talked about Pete Crow Armstrong last week after he recommitted and kind of repeated what he had said. He's not looking.
I'd like to see the Cubs offer Tucker a 5-year, $250 million contract. That would be $50 million a year, okay?
But only for 5 years.
Yeah.
Would you think that Kyle Tucker would be more inclined to take that and then take another shot?
I mean,
at 30 years, he's 30, right?
The 10-year deals are stupid, right? Because the last 5 years don't work out, right? So why not pay the money up front?
I think the 10-year deals are stupid, but I don't think the agents think the 10-year deals are stupid.
No, because they get 5% of the total amount.
The players are going to be seeking the longest term and more than the highest average annual salary.
That's really, in a way, not to their benefit, mm-hmm. because their careers and their personas are beaten down when you become Miguel Cabrera or a Albert Pujols and have to, the last 5 years, try to get by on being a mediocre to poor player.
Can I ask you another question about Alcantara? The Cubs, we talk about what they can afford and what they would give up. Who are they competing with, do you think? Do you know other teams out there that will be in the Sandy Alcantara sweepstakes?
Yeah, I mean, almost everybody.
Everybody who's a contender?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean,
Dodgers? Yes.
Dodgers have had how many pitchers on the IL this year?
Yankees? Yeah.
Yeah.
Boston. Red Sox? Are they in it?
Right now, they're under 500.
Are they going to be sellers or buyers?
Breslow said yesterday he's not selling.
He's not selling. Breslow said he's not selling. Not even to his old
today
team.
You got a month till the trading deadline's over.
I wonder how the Cubs prospect pool compares to the ones we just mentioned. The Dodgers always have prospects, but you wonder how the Cubs offer compares to the other ones that the Marlins will be weighing.
Right. Well, the Marlins are going to want guys that are under contract control, right, for 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And somebody like Horton, you have that. You have that with Owen Casey. You have that with all their guys in the minor leagues, their top young pitcher or two down there as well. So their perspective of what it's going to take is maybe different than yours and mine, right?
Yes, it will be. I think that, though, when you talk about the caliber of the prospect, though, you know, the Cubs have four guys at AAA Iowa who in the first half of the season are hitting the cover off the ball. Owen Casey, Kelvin Alcantara, Moises Ballesteros, and the first baseman, right. Jonathan Long, they are, not that he's maybe the caliber prospects of the first three, but those first three prospects, along with now, if you want to consider Cade Horton, although I don't think they're trading him, but those are pretty good prospects to dangle.
So if I told you the caliber at AAA now is the worst it's been in 20 years, would that change your mind?
It would kill my buzz, Bruce. Did it again.
I'm sorry. The reality is always a hard thing to deal with.
I do. I do understand that. Let's squeeze in one more phone call before we break. Big Mac is on the north side. Big Mac, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Gentlemen, first time caller. Pleasure listening to you guys on Saturdays.
Thank you.
When I got on the call, I said, okay, I agree with Bruce, but I agree with both of you. Betting Nico Horner is an old school way of doing things today, but it's also the most productive thing to do. All right. If you go back to when he did that leadoff, I believe it was his first full season as a Cub. He's pretty god darn productive, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably right.
So David and I went over the numbers. On base percentage for Horner and for Happ are just about the exact same, right around 340.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. I mean, I just think Happ is starting to get into that streak where he's going to be hammering the ball, okay? And he's been doing that lately. I think since this last month in June, I think he's got 8 home runs, right? So, again, I think he's going to impact that lineup at number 5 more than anybody they've been putting there.
That's an interesting point. We'll continue to counter this conversation. We'll talk to White Sox hitting instructor Ryan Fuller when we come back. We have breaking news here on The Score. Breaking news brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. According to Shams Charania, the Bulls have made a trade and are trading Lonzo Ball to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Shams Charania is reporting that the Chicago Bulls are trading Lonzo Ball to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Isaac Okoro, a 24-year-old shooting guard, and it is he's going to join the Bulls' collection of guards that's getting a crowded backcourt. And Lonzo Ball, who was on an extended contract with the Bulls is on the move, according to Shams Charania. Lonzo Ball played last year. They limited minutes, but this is the Cleveland Cavaliers in a Eastern Conference that is up for grabs, getting better. I think this is an interesting move.
Well, are the Bulls going to get better?
I need to really digest this. It just happened, but I don't know about that, Bruce. This doesn't seem to make a ton of sense to me.
Ball was not a part of the Bulls' future.
No, but he was on a very affordable contract, and he played a good role as far as being a veteran presence. And Okoro is somebody who played in 55 games last year, started 22, 19 minutes per game, and was a 37% three-point shooter. On a very good team, he averaged 6 points a game, but the Bulls, breaking news, trading Lonzo Ball to the Cavaliers, too, for Isaac Okoro. And we'll have more on that. Steve Rosenblum is going to be between 11 and 2. We're going to keep talking baseball here and inside the clubhouse. We come back here till 11. David Hall, Bruce Levine, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You know, it can take some time. I mean, it can take 5 to 8 years to really realize, you know, how impactful or lack of impact a trade may have. And, you know, so obviously you're looking to get an immediate return and a player perhaps to come up here and produce out of the gate. Where we're at right now, obviously we're looking at the long-term health of the organization. Thankfully, an example, I guess, would be the Crochet deal. We were able to get a handful of players that were at the upper levels of the minor leagues, and we're able to see those guys getting comfortable now at the big league level between Teal and Mydroth and obviously Vargas from last year.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
That was Chris Getz on CHSN's Friday night broadcast, White Sox and Giants, talking about overall the big picture. And we are here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. David Haw, Bruce Levine on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Breaking news in other sports. The Bulls have traded Lonzo Ball to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Isaac Okoro, small forward. And we'll talk about that with Steve Rosenblum's here at 11 o'clock until 2 to break everything down there. But now it's time to go out to our Score hotline. This brought to you by the Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com. The White Sox director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, joins us. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So you look at the White Sox in terms of the season of development, have 10 rookies, not all of them are hitters, but from your perspective, how would you describe where you are in the development and who is maybe an example of one of your success stories?
Yeah, there are a lot of success stories up and down the organization. And obviously at the big league level, we've seen a lot of young guys come up and produce, and that's not always the case. Usually when you look at guys come up to the big leagues, there's usually an adjustment period and struggling, but we've seen with Chase Mydras, Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro come up and really showcase their skills and bring energy and enthusiasm to what we're doing. And then across the minor leagues, it's Brayden Montgomery, Sam Antenacci. We've had some really good performances up and down the organization. So when you look at the health long-term, it's really exciting, and we're looking forward to seeing more guys come up and contribute.
Ryan, take us back to the Colson Montgomery timeout period where he stopped playing, went to Arizona. I'm assuming you were there most of the time, overseeing a lot of the instruction. And talk about what first of all, the philosophy of doing it. Second of all, what success did you feel that he got out of this?
Yeah, I would say what a unique opportunity, and that's one thing that Colson and I said every day. We were down in Arizona for 2 weeks. What an opportunity this is, and this was talked about with Chris, Josh Barfield, and really looking at it, what is best for Colson. And he was obviously struggling at the beginning of the year, and when you struggle to start, you start looking up at the scoreboard, and it feels like you're in this hole, and man, how am I going to get out of it? And there have been other experiences that guys have gone through where there's a pause during the season. And luckily we have a great facility in Arizona where we have unlimited time, space. We have a lab cage where we have high-speed cameras, force plates. So we were really objective with what we were doing. And credit to Colson. He was not excited about being taken away from competition like any competitor would be. But once the decision was made, it was hey, let's get after this and let's make this really productive. So we spent hours every day in the cage working together, dinners at night, going over mindset, things we could do. And coming away, you see he's gone a little bit ups and downs, battling some injuries. But when he is consistent, he's really aware of what makes him great. And that was the whole idea of going to Arizona, not trying to reinvent who he was, but reaffirm who he was at his best. So he has a really good awareness of when things are going off track, how to make quicker adjustments and be aware of the important things in a swing.
We're talking with the White Sox director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Lenin Sosa earlier this week had a game in which he hit two home runs. And then you start to look deeper into the numbers and you realize he's doing a lot of the damage with two strikes. This is a very good two-strike hitter. What is it about his approach that makes him that kind of a hitter with two strikes? And is that something that comes from the top? Is that something that other players can copy? How would you explain it?
Yeah, it's so interesting to look at how each hitter produces their production. And with Lenin, there's obviously some noise to that signal with two strikes, him having some of the best swings of the season. And what we talk about with two strikes is being able to slow it down, see the ball deeper, being able to make decisions not out in front, but catch it a little bit deeper where you can see the ball deeper. And I think that gives him the freedom to be able to slow things down when you do get that mistake, being able to attack it, but also feeling good, like he has such a great ability of hitting a ball to the opposite field, seeing it deep, hitting line drives. And this is what Lenin's done going back to last year as well. He was one of the league leaders in terms of line drive percentage. So a really great hitter. And then the question becomes, how do we do that in 0-0 counts before two strikes to be even more consistent? Because when Lenin is controlling the zone, taking his walks, he is one of the more premier contact hitters in the league.
Ryan, we look at what occurred with Tim Anderson, what occurred with Eloy Jimenez, what's occurred with other hitters that have really had dominant careers and years and then failed. Turning to Luis Robert, the similarity between some of those guys and what Robert's gone through is that they had lower half of their body injuries. And the ability to hit a ball and hit it with authority, in my novice opinion, is you have to have strength in your lower half to hit. You have to feel like you're anchored to the ground to be able to hit. I wonder what your philosophy is on Robert and whether or not these lower body injuries possibly have had an impact on him.
Yeah, I think luckily we're looking at Louis, and you see that there's a lot more time. The story has not been written with him, and we feel that the best is yet to come with him. And certainly he's showing his skill set, not just hitting, but on the base pass too. And a credit to performance department, our medical team. He's been doing a great job of staying on the field, one of the league leaders in terms of stolen bases. But certainly the lower half is a huge part of any hitter's performance. And with him, making sure we're really consistent with the lower half movements, our timing, make sure he's up in time to make really good decisions, to be able to say no when he wants to, and then be able to go when he does. So like any hitter, making sure, and we have the tools with Hawkeye, it's like the X-ray vision. Every game, we're able to see their movements. We're able to see, are you consistently getting to the spots we want to? And then making quick adjustments. And Marcus and Joel, our hitting coaches in the big leagues, are looking at it every day. And Louis's been putting in really good work. So we're looking forward to seeing those numbers change here soon.
Do you agree with my analysis about Anderson and Jimenez that the lower half injuries, the leg injuries, impacted them to a point where it changed their career path?
Yeah, I can't really speak to it. I was not here when they were here, but obviously the lower half fuels the upper half of the swing as well. So the more stable and strong we are, and that's one thing we preach from the Dominican Republic all the way to Chicago, that we are preparing you for 162-plus games at the major league level. There's going to be bumps and bruises along the way. How do we get stronger throughout the year versus working really hard in the off season and then seeing those returns diminish through the year? So we're really driving, not just training hard in the cage, but also getting stronger throughout the year in the weight room.
Before we let you go, I have to ask you about some things going on in the minor league system, because organizationally there is excitement and reasons for optimism. George Wolko is a guy who's had a pretty good run there, hitting home runs. And Brad Montgomery is another name that is going to, make White Sox fans excited about the future. Where are those two guys in terms of their development, and what kinds of seasons are they having?
Yeah, George is doing a great job. He was player of the week in Kannapolis a couple of weeks ago. He struggled at the beginning of the year, but we saw a turn where he was hitting the ball consistently hard. He was making better swing decisions, and his focus from last year really struggled with his contact skills. So obviously he has the ability to impact the baseball. How do we touch the baseball more to let that happen more often? And we've seen really nice increases this year. So he's doing a really good job, and the performance over the last month has jumped up and caught up to what we were tracking underneath. So that's been really exciting. And Braden Montgomery, I was with him last week in Winston, and man, what a competitor. This guy loves to swing. He loves to get after it in the weight room. Just a really good poster of what we want our hitters to do. And terms of learning the strike zone, making contact, hitting the ball hard at really good line drive angles. It's his first year in pro ball, so really excited to see him continue to be challenged, make adjustments, and he's a really nice profile.
Quickly, Ryan, we see this a lot now in today's modern Major League Baseball, the accelerated path to the majors. Could Braden Montgomery be in a White Sox uniform by the end of the season?
I'll leave that up to Getsy. There's obviously a lot of levels in the minor league.
Come on, it's just us three right now
to go through.
It's just us three. I mean, well, let me ask you this: as the top hitting guy in the organization, if Getz came to you and said, "Would this be a good way for player development for Montgomery?" What would you say?
It's not so much looking at the big leagues. It's where they are right now. And with Braden, having the conversation of, hey, here's where you rank on the skills that we deem important across high A. And it's clear that there's still work to do. And then we'll do the same thing when they get to double A, triple A. It's like video games. You want to beat that level before going to the next one. Because if you don't learn those lessons at those levels, you're going to learn a really hard way at an even harder level. So we want to make sure at each level they're earning it, they're learning the lessons, and skill-wise they're developing.
Ryan, thanks for your time this morning. Best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you, guys.
Ryan Fuller, the White Sox director of hitting, talking to us for a few moments.
I want him up here.
Braden Montgomery?
Both of them.
Look, the Reds have got a guy.
All the Montgomerys you can give me.
Well, that would be a Montgomery Ward.
Wow.
See?
Wow, you've been waiting with that.
Let's sit on that one, Bruce. Thanks for setting me up. All right, we come back. We'll wrap things up here inside the clubhouse. Again, breaking news. The Bulls have traded Lonzo Ball to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They signed him to a contract extension, and then they basically are trading him. Steve Rosenblum's show will be here at 11 o'clock until 2 o'clock. Isaac Okoro, small forward from the Cavs, comes in return. Wrap things up next. It's inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Now Raleigh steps in, the Major League's home run leader with 30. And he's batting left-handed, drives one in the air. This is trouble. Deep right center. This is going to leave the yard by quite a bit of distance. Way up into the stands, just to the right of straightaway. And Raleigh has just belted his 31st home run of the year.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Hawk.
That was Cal Raleigh, one of the four home runs he hit last weekend at Wrigley Field. He is in the news because he's going to participate in the Home Run Derby in Atlanta.
I want Pete. PCA.
Okay, that is what you think Pete Crow Armstrong should do. I don't agree. I don't think Pete Crow Armstrong is the kind of hitter that screams home run, and if he tries to hit home runs, it might mess up his swing.
PCA. PCA.
You want him to do it?
Yeah.
You want Kyle Tucker to do it?
Sure.
I love the story about Cal Raleigh because he's going to have
his
dad.
Exhibition.
His dad is throwing to him his former baseball coach.
It's the most watched exhibition of the year.
I know, but from a Cubs perspective, can you take the risk of PCA toying with his swing, ruining his swing? I just don't know if I like that idea.
To his credit, he said he didn't want to do it, right?
Right.
I mean, he understands, you know, taking 800 swings and maybe, I mean, he's a max out guy, right? So you don't want him hurting himself in home run derby.
That's the point.
Right.
And
but from the entertainment part?
He doesn't even consider himself a home run hitter, does he?
But for the entertainment part of baseball and Cub fans glorifying in PCA and the baseball world getting to see him on the biggest
stage.
They
can enjoy him catching the fly ball at his waist and doing a little spin in the outfield.
You sound like a coach.
As long as there's it's the third out, that's fine.
You're boring. Would you let him shag some of the fly balls out in the outfield for the home run derby?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, come on, that's weak.
Is there a bunting derby?
He wouldn't be in that either.
No, he wouldn't. See? But we know he doesn't consider himself a home run hitter because the other night, first and third, he's bunting.
When there's Chicago players that are that good, that entertaining, I have Chicago pride. I want them to be on display for the whole baseball world to watch. Hey, look what we have every day here in Chicago.
Do you think it's myth or reality that the home run derby can mess with somebody's swing?
I think it's reality.
Okay. If you accept that as a premise, then PCA should stay away from the home run derby.
Okay. Because
things are going quite well.
Okay, we have 2 minutes left in this segment. You win.
Thank you. Finally, I win an argument.
What are we doing for the next 2 minutes?
I don't know. We're debating whether or not the Cubs should trade Cade Horton after last night and wondering how they will fare later today when they play the Astros for game two with Colin Ray on the mound.
Yeah, it's a big start for Ray and the Cubs because it's been wonky for him over the recent starts as well. And to his credit, he's been one of the highlights for the Cubs, stepping out of the bullpen, stepping in when Imanaga got hurt, right? I mean, this was huge for the Cubs. He stabilized them, but, you know, is he one of your five rotation guys the rest of the year?
Colin Ray versus Lance McCullers Jr. at 6:15 tonight right here on The Score. Pregame 5:30 with Zach Zabin on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. White Sox back in action this afternoon at Wright Field. They got a good one. Adrian Hauser against Robbie Ray. Sox and Giants, Bruce. Big weekend of baseball. We had a great show today. Thank you for setting up all the stuff.
Yeah, we thank Dustin Kelly of the Cubs, Ryan Fuller of the White Sox. Great guests. And we thank you, the baseball fan, for being with us every Saturday, talking wall-to-wall baseball, where you get information, great guests, and not talking about where David and I went to dinner.
And also today you got a little basketball news, the breaking news for the Bulls. They traded Lonzo Ball to the Cavaliers for Isaac Okoro. I'm sure that Steve Rosenblum will have something to say about that when he comes up next. Thank you to Sean Sears behind the glass, keeping the show on the road here, and thank you for listening, calling, and texting. We'll be back here next week for Inside the Clubhouse. Talk to you Monday morning on the Mully and Haw Show. For Bruce Levine, I'm David Haw. We'll talk to you later.
PCA. PCA.